Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bowlology Report. Damien Fleming here, as always. Unfortunately, in Victoria, over 700 cases now, and COVID, the pandemic, continues to play havoc here in Victoria. So please stay safe, wear your masks, and let's get through this together. Co-host, got a new one for today, and he's a beauty. Scored hundreds for Australia in one day cricket, Test cricket. He's the captain of the Victorian cricket team. He's an absolute star. Thank you very much, Peter Hanscom.
Thanks, Flem. What an introduction, mate. That's got me going, up and about.
Yeah, I got your email, so thanks for helping me out with the intro. I wasn't sure what to say. The lockdown? What's it been for you?
It's been a lot of work around home and the farm. A lot of TV, a lot of Netflix, and when we've been able to get outside, the golf, bit of golf.
So were you a keen golfer coming into this pandemic, or has it just increased throughout?
No, I'm a very, very poor golfer, and I never got into it when there was cricket on, because I was like, why would I stand in the field for 6 hours a day and then go and play golf and stand on grass for another 4 hours, probably 5 hours the way I'm playing? So no, I never got into it, but now that we've got the time, I've definitely got the golf bug. I'm out there. I've already played. I played back-to-back 18s the other day, and just hitting them really, really poorly. So there's plenty of room for improvement.
I was exactly the same. You know, when I couldn't think of anything worse, and particularly for the fast bowlers, you know, bowling the 40 overs in a test or first-class cricket and having shoulder problems.
Shoulders, but then as well, twisting. I mean, you're swinging hard.
Now, you're a skipper. You're a leader. You wait till you retire. You'll get asked to do some corporate speaking. And I can tell you, if you're playing with the CEO or general manager of a big firm and shooting 130, he doesn't want to hear you talk 6 hours later because he's been fetching your ball.
He's not bringing you back. So got to get that under 100. Under 90 would be lovely. But
so what's your handicap? Yeah. What'd you start at? What are you now?
Well, I'm giving myself, I don't have an official handicap, but I'm giving myself a shot a hole. I'm going around 18. So scoring, I've had the odd day where I've scored, yeah, your 36, maybe a 38, 8-pointer. But then there's days where I've walked around and got below 20 points. So it's very licorice all sorts kind of golf.
It's tough because some of your teammates, we had one of them yesterday, Dan Christian, or former teammate, he's off one. He's been having those battles with Glenn Maxwell off one. Johnny Holland, scratch.
Yeah, we've got some good golfers in the team and past players as well. Like it seems to lend itself, cricket, to golf. Once you retire, you really, really go for it. So, I mean, you're playing plenty as well, mate.
No, I'm getting it in at Riversdale. Lucky to get those two hits in a week. So, you know, just getting down, you know, at seven at the moment. I might have peaked in the pandemic. Hey, talking about golf. Now, I'm a lot older than you. I'm 50, but it was the 40th anniversary of the greatest golf movie of all time, Caddyshack. And for me growing up, Pete, this is how old I am. I had a cousin, Tim, Tim Allen, who had played footy for St Kilda and the Hawks. We used to stay at each other's joints in school holidays, and my auntie Lorraine got a VHS, so a video recorder. Like in 1979-80, you know, we didn't get one for another 3 years in my family, and the two free movies they got, one was Grease and the second was Caddyshack. So we must have watched Caddyshack 1,000 times, myself and my cousin Tim. And then my era of mates, you know, we just absolutely loved it because, you know, Bill Murray was massive, Chevy Chase, Rodney Dangerfield. The quotes even on the, you know, lend itself to cricket, you know, with the rain, you know, the heavy stuff's going to come down for quite a while, all that Cinderella story. Now, I gave you a little project. You said you'd watched it once. You had to watch it last night. So as a 20-year younger man, what was your review?
Oh, it was, yeah, I mean, you gave it a massive rap as well. Like, got to watch it. It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. That's, mate, it had its funny moments, but I'm not sure if I was more laughing at the movie or with the movie. The way, you know, the cinema has come, some of the effects, some of the jokes.
I thought the gopher looked real life, you reckon?
Oh, the dancing gopher every time a bit of music come on and he started just having a little boogie. Oh, mate, it was brilliant. And very funny, but like I said, I was laughing out loud, but I wasn't sure if it was at it or with it.
Speaking of the gopher, his dance reminds me of our special guest today.
Oh yeah.
There's a little bit of our special guest in the dancing of that gopher.
Yeah, something done on there.
So, do you think it's probably not going to spread through the next generation of Australian Victorian cricketer, Caddyshack?
Probably not. And even, you know, if I were to ask, I think a few of the young boys at Crew Victoria, I don't think they'd even have heard of Caddyshack.
All right, no Cinderella story there. I'm still, it's in my top five. Don't worry about that.
Just let it happen. Be the ball. Be the ball, Danny. You're not being the ball, Danny.
Well, it's kind of difficult with you talking like
okay.
that.
Okay, I'm not talking. Stop talking. Not talking now.
You mentioned the Vics, the Victorian cricket team. What's happening in lockdown? How are the restrictions, restricted your own sort of training sessions and, what have you been up to in the last month or so?
Yeah, I mean, given the tough times, we've actually been really lucky in the way that we've still been allowed to train and not much has actually changed in the way that we would do our pre-season. So we've had to train, split the squad into two groups, essentially, pretty much an early morning and a mid-morning group just for numbers reasons. And you get in, you get your work done and you get out. So we're still able to run, go to the gym, and we've started skills this month as well, so it's nice to have a bit of bat v ball, but not much has changed, but there's not a lot of hanging around or talking to the boys or talking about, you know, what's going on. It's very much get in, get out.
Yeah, and that's fair enough too. What about your own game, Pete? Do you get much feedback from, say, the Australian setup or your Victoria, even though you don't have a coach at the moment, the Vics, but or is it more being proactive yourself? I mean, your technique always gets picked apart, but you've always said you're comfortable with it. So do you make an assessment of your technique and your skill development yourself?
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I've done with my technique is the way I see it with coaches is you get a lot of information from a lot of people, and then it's up to the player to decide what's good for them and what's not. So basically I'm still, you know, trying to own my game, but I'm going to go about it the way I want to and the way I feel is the best for me. And at least that way moving forward, I can commit 100% to every game and every ball that I'm playing, knowing that it's something that I believe in and not something that I've just been told to do because it'll look better or because it'll make me better. If I don't believe it, then it won't happen.
No, definitely. Owning your own games, I think half the battle there. A question I often ask the modern day player is how you adjust to the three different forms, you know, the 4 or 5 day cricket. Your 1 day cricket has been fantastic last couple of years, and then obviously into T20 cricket. You know, can you explain to the listeners how you go about adjusting to all the different formats?
I think the biggest thing about adjusting between the formats is Well, I believe it's just purely mindset, because your technique will generally stand up in each format. But the shorter it gets, the more expansive you're going to get. And it's just an extension of a shot that you've already got. So your forward defense, you know, turns into a, you might try a drive or a cover drive with that same ball. If you're going from red to white, you kind of start to take more calculated risks the shorter the game gets. And, you know, in red ball, we've seen some of the best in the world. They own their area. You know, we've seen AB, you know, talk about his box. He owns his little box there and makes sure that, you know, he scores if it's outside and nails it if it's there. And we're seeing guys like Smudge and Marnus do exactly the same. But then once it gets shorter, you need to be able to score off that ball as well. So you start to move around. You start to change your game a little bit based on your strengths. And that's where your mindset comes in. You need to know where you can score and how you can score, and then understanding what's happening in the game, and then you believe yourself and you back yourself 100%.
Yeah, I definitely think it's got to be such a mental, more a mental challenge, and it gets back to that commitment and that ownership. What about the captaincy? How have you found that? Because I remember Steve Waugh was a teammate of mine in the Australian team. Then he became captain, a very good captain. And I said, what was the difference? And he just said, the phone stopped ringing. No one wanted to be seen to be sucking up to the captain.
Yeah. A lot of dinners by yourself on tour. But Uber Eats just comes into the door. You don't leave your hotel. All the other boys are going out, having a nice dinner. And, yeah, your phone just stays quiet. But no. In all seriousness, I love the captaincy. It has its moments though as well. I mean, we at Victoria, we pride ourselves as you know, being able to be really strong individually, you know, as a person, and you believe in what you're doing. And because of stuff, some, you know, having that mindset, sometimes you play with some really, really strong egos. And you know, every now and then I'll be getting. I'll get a comment here and there during a game that I should be like, you know, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And it's like, yeah, mate, I've thought about it, and we're going in this direction. But that's what makes captaining the Vics amazing as well, is that we've got so many brains that are willing and able to tell me, you know, straight to my face what you know they would be doing, and that's how I get better as a captain as well.
Must be. It is 500 for Stuart Broad. What a moment. Into the gallery of greats he goes.
And Pete, obviously, it was great to watch some test series on Fox, the England versus the West Indies. And first off, I think we're all reckon the West Indies were admirable in the way. Firstly, offering to play a test series over there, winning the first test. I mean, their bowling was fantastic. And I think they've got a bowling attack. They probably get wickets just about everywhere. The batting, good at times, but that inability to turn good starts into hundreds really hurt them. But for England, you know, they certainly look like they're still going to be quite a dominant team. You know, what were your thoughts of the series?
Yeah, well, you summed it up pretty well there. Great to see the West Indies come out and play that test series, given everything's going on. Their bowling attack, I think, for the West Indies can be something special. They've got accuracy, they've got pace, and they've got some big, big bowlers that coming from a serious height can really worry some batsmen. And so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, guys like that would go at a Gabba or a Wacker, where there's some serious pace and bounce. You know, they could prove to be pretty impressive in those conditions. But yeah, I think that batting has a lot of potential, but just didn't stand up in those key moments you're talking about. You know, getting those starts, turning them into big big hundreds or at least a big partnership. I just don't think they ever got going. And that's probably credit as well to the English bowling attack, which at the moment is, you know, right up there with the best in the world, because they never let up. There was always a chance. They never gave the West Indies a session where they could start controlling the game. And so that's some proper bowling.
Well, you talk about bowling depth. Stuart Broad didn't play the first test. And he almost, I think he got man of the series.
He ended up getting player of the series. 16 wickets in two tests at 10.9. So that's, if you're not playing him in the first test, then you've got that in the bank. That's a pretty impressive bowling lineup.
I still can't believe, Pete, 500 test wickets. You know, when Dennis Lilly got to 350, you know, I thought, wow, that's going to take years to break. And, you know, it started going up, you know, Hadley and Botham and Kapil Dev. And we've seen three spinners, you know, legends, you know, Warney, Murali, Kumble, you know, getting into the 700 test wickets. But for fast bowlers, you know, McGrath, Anderson are now Broad. And Courtney Walsh. It's not just skill, technique. I mean, there's so much resilience to play that much amount of cricket and keep performing.
Yeah, spot on. So, yeah, you're talking about guys staying on the park to start with, where, you know, bowling is such a foreign thing for the human body. So to be able to keep yourself strong and fit and keep going back-to-back games is incredible to start with. And then to keep your skill level up over so long, to keep taking down oppositions, you know, it's just incredible. And I felt for Brodie a little bit because, like Anderson got his 500th wicket at Lord's, you know, big crowd, would go absolutely nuts. And here's Brodie steaming in, gets his 500th and silence, no crowd, no nothing. Like he's got his teammates there, but geez, you'd want a bit of atmosphere for your 500th, surely.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was there. My first day of cricket, as I keep saying, was when Dennis Lilly broke the record, and there's 50,000 people at the MCG chanting Lilly for about 15 minutes. Yeah. I mean, that's the way you want to do it. Have you faced much of Anderson and Broad? And if so, can you talk about sort of the difference between the two or their strengths?
I got a little bit. I played two tests against England, so I got three innings to bat. And they're just relentless. So they know exactly where they're putting the ball. They never give you a bad ball. So trying to score off these guys and put pressure back on them is so tough. And then they just work you over. They've got their skills. They've got, like, we know Jimmy can go both ways with a beautiful, beautiful seam presentation. And then Brodie's got his big in ducker to the right-handers, but still the one that goes straight and takes your outside edge. So there's minimal change in their actions, minimal change in their wrist, and they're able to do, you know, very, very skillful things. I was lucky enough to have a crack against them. Both of them have got me out, so it's fair to say that they've won the battle so far, but I'd like to have another crack at them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, right, because there's a battery. We haven't mentioned Archer, Wood, you know, Wokes, you know, probably doesn't have as great a record away from England, but in England he's a very good, very good player. It'll be interesting to see. Broad has to come out, you know, because you might lose a bit of pace that bounces there, but whether you'll get another chance at James Anderson, I wouldn't write him off, but the stocks are looking good for England. But as good as Brodie's 500 test wickets were, he didn't light up the internet like Rakeem Cornwell, did he? 140 kilos, left arm orthodox, slogs him with the bat, great reactions with the catching. And now there's talk, Darren Lehman, Shane Watson, bring him out for the big bash. What do you reckon?
Yes. Don't tease me, Flem. Don't tease me. If you're hearing whispers that he's coming out, this is exciting. This is what cricket wants. What a man. He's He's great. I think he's close to having it all. Like you said, he slogs him with the bat, bowls some beautiful little tweakers, and just grabs him at first slip. I don't know if you saw the catch off Chase, off Burns. One-handed first slip against the spin, like that's a good catch, proper first grip stuff.
Well, you're a captain. Where are you fielding him once you can't field a slip though in a T20 game?
No, I think you just take it on. You go, right, we'll have a slip for 20 overs and just leave him there and, so be it.
Beautifully today as Chris Rogers waits for the ball to come on, as Michael Vaughan said.
Well, Pete, our guest today, what an absolute superstar he was for Australia, Western Australia, Victoria, and too many domestic teams for me to mention here. 25 tests, average 43, 76 times he raised the bat in first-class cricket. He's probably the most famous Chris Rogers that I know. It's, of course, Chris Bucky Rogers. Bucky, thanks for joining us on the Bowlology Report.
Good on you, yes, Len. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed how you said what a legend I was. So that just makes me feel even older, mate, today. So anyway, yep. Those days are long gone, it feels like.
Just quickly, with the nicknames, right, Bucky, when they started calling you that, did you have any idea what that meant?
Mate, that's a tough question. That's a long time ago. I think I probably did. I think my brother probably got bucked before me. So, I probably understood why after the TV show, yeah.
Yep, that Buck Rogers in the 25th century. I'm showing my age. I remember the TV series there. But, Pete, you're an ex-teammate of Bucky, but also one of the reasons we got him on and is that he actually presented you your baggy green. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, he sure did. Pretty exciting moment, obviously, for myself. But something I noticed when Bucky was presenting it as well was how nervous he was, and I've actually never seen Buck shake too much unless he's on the dance floor. And he had his little cards out, and his hand was shaking a little bit. But that made it even more special because it kind of showed how much it meant for him as well to be able to present a bag of dream.
Bucky, was it the first time you'd given one out or not?
It is. My one and only, really. I've been able to get, lucky enough to give Pete his bag of green. I still don't think it's the best thing I give him. I gave him the ability to dance, so I'm probably prouder of that. But it was a great day. I remember getting a call and Darren Lehman asking if I could present it to Pete, and it was pretty special because when Peter first came into the Victorian side, he kind of gravitated a little bit to myself and T-Han Chandra Mohan, which was the physio. I used to like to go out every now and again, so I decided to hang out with the physio rather than the other players and take them down. So Pete would kind of tag along every now and again, and we showed him the ropes. But and then from there, just that our friendship grew, and those moments are very special. There were three presentations that day. You could probably remember more closely than me, Pete, but I was lucky last, actually. I followed Ian Healy, and then it was Simon Cadditch, and then it was myself. And I'd just like people to know I nailed it. I was by far the best. So, yeah, pretty proud of that.
Absolutely nailed it, mate. Didn't put a foot wrong.
Hey, Bucky, did you get presented by someone, your baggy green? Was it 399? Who gave it to you?
Justin Langer gave it to me. That was – I don't know what you feel like, Pete, but it's just such a whirlwind, that first test. I know other people have said it, particularly if you listen to Mike Hussey. I've heard him say he almost can't remember the first test because it's just so much to take in, Lem, I'm not sure what you'd have been like, but there's so much going on, kind of not only on the field but off the field, and you're kind of overwhelmed with all these emotions as well, so I wouldn't have a clue what JL said. I'd be interested to know if Pete has any recollection of what I managed to say.
I've got no recollection of what what you wrote down, but there was only there was one thing that stuck with me. Like you had your piece of paper and you're reading some stuff off that, but and I don't know if you remember this, but
shaking like a shitting dog, was I? Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, and then you gave him a hat, and we had a little hug, and you whispered something in my ear, which is always I've always remembered. I've never told anyone what it was, but I found it quite a special moment. I can't remember. I don't know if you can remember what you told me.
It would have been something like, oh, actually, I think it have something to do with your father?
Yep. Yeah, spot on. That's probably the one thing I remember from your speech. Everything else, mate, straight over my head.
Yeah. Well, there's just so much to take in, and you're just so excited about the day ahead and then everything that happens, you know, you're trying to remember the good bits, and then, but sometimes, you know, it goes in one ear and out the other. But it's a special moment, but funny how you forget it.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to present the bag of green to Jai Richardson and Mr. Cricket, who he must be hired to give them out. He's given out about 120, I think, Mike Hussey, hasn't he, over the years? So he gave it to. He gave it to Curtis Patterson, nice little, as you imagine, from Mr. Cricket, very organised. And I'm thinking, I've got to get him early here. So just as Mike Hussey finished, I turned to him and said, great speech, David, like that. And Gazaline and all that just started pissing themselves. But I wanted to keep it short because for Jai, as you said, you could just see his parents are there. Everything's going to happen quickly. And most likely, as you two have just mentioned, you don't bloody remember it anyway.
I think that's one of the other really nice things about it is particularly now, like you get the family members to come out and stand there and witness it. I think that is really special because it didn't happen with me. I don't know what happened with you, Clem. That's ages ago, mate. So yeah,
it was in the coffin.
Remember it?
I just had to reach it out of the coffin.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, so just that was nice. I know a few of Pete's family were there and his girlfriend. Pretty sure that's right, Pete, wasn't it? So the fact that he got to share it with them was really special.
But Bucky, it's your this is your life here. So from that first test match, you were going to be a one test wonder for 5 years. Can you talk us through just that process of you mentioned in your book, great read, the South Doubts, troubles in WA, you're not going to play again, and you get the opportunity 5 years later.
Yeah, it was an interesting journey. There was probably there was a bit of bitterness, I guess, and disappointment. The one thing I think that happens, and I've spoken to a few other people who are in the kind of the one test wonder group, is it feels like you haven't really earned it. You've got it, but when you look at it, it's so brand new. It's like, did I actually even play in that, you know? And generally, if you're a one test wonder, it's because you didn't actually have a great game in that first test. So I guess I would just, I almost put it away. I wasn't proud of it. It's just that, it's a bit like you do all this hard work, you know, like it's like scaling a mountain. You do all this hard work and then you get dropped and someone kind of pushes you off and you've got to start all over again and do all that hard work to get to back to the top of the mountain. And you just almost, when you're at the base of it, after you've been dropped, you look up and you think, nuts to us, can't do it again. All the sacrifices I've already made, it's going to be hard to go through that again. So that's probably why it took me quite a while to recover. And if I look at other people who have been in similar boats, like Bob Quiney, I know he played a couple, but Callum Ferguson and Joe Meny recently and stuff like that, that's why I reckon afterwards they had a bit of a period where And I think it almost takes a year where it's just like you kind of come into terms with it. So I don't know how it's been for you, Pete, like when you've had your disappointments and how you've been able to rebound. But, yeah, I know playing one test, it just felt like, well, did that really even happen? And, you know, I'm probably not going to get another chance again.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Yeah, just the one test, you go from that extreme high to an extreme low in the space of a couple of days, and imagining what that does for your cricket psyche, and then going out there and trying to have the confidence to still dominate domestic cricket like you had for, you know, seven years leading into it, and then you know, to try and bounce back from that, like you said, climb that mountain again. That's hard. It's hard enough when you get dropped after a couple of games, but you get dropped after one when you feel like you haven't had the opportunity to show how good you are at that level. Can't be easy.
It's interesting because the one thing I get asked about this a little bit, you know, what was it like after, or at least I used to be when I was a legend slam. but you get asked this and it's a bit like, how did you keep going? And look, I'll be the first one to admit, I was playing professional cricket for a living. You know, at the time when I moved, I was playing 6 months in Melbourne and 6 months in London, you know, and earning pretty good money. It's not like I was struggling in terms of my lifestyle. So it was no hardship there. It was probably just kind of resorting back to my competitive spirit, you know, that fight that drives me all the time. So that wasn't too hard. It was probably just looking at people get those opportunities when I felt like I could have got more of an opportunity. But you know, that's timing and you know, people's opinions as well. So you just have to try and deal with it.
And the one thing I love is that the continual persistence, Bucky, because, you know, a week after your test debut, you get dropped from the Western Australian one day team. So you're not even playing domestic cricket. Then, you know, Phil Jakes gets picked, Simon Cadditch, you know, there's continual knocks in your head, but you continued to average 50. What about the domestic change? You know, what did you notice? Did you notice much about the different cultures between Western Australian cricket and Victorian cricket?
Oh yeah, the difference between Perth grade cricket and Melbourne grade cricket is chalk and cheese. So in Perth, you play, the conditions are really good. They're fast, bouncy pitches all the times, but it gets really hot, you know. And sometimes you kind of go through the motions, and it's played. There's a little bit of sledging, but it's pretty friendly all in all. And then you go to Vic, the conditions in Melbourne cricket aren't as good. It's scrappy. All the players who play Premier cricket all want to be AFL players. So they sledge like nothing else. I'll never forget playing my first game against Fitzroy. And there was this little punk at point, I think in his debut at 17, kind of sledging me, saying, "This bloke's got no idea." All this kind of thing. I was just laughing. I was going, "What the hell is this?" You know. So, it was a bit like that. You know, like I just kind of say all the cricketers in Melbourne just want to be AFL players. So they play it like that, really. And that's the best way to describe it. So, and then there's lots to like about both systems. But in terms of the Vic change room and the WA change room, it was a lot different. There were some really incredible players in the Vic Cret change room, like Brad Hodge, David Hussey, Shane Harwood, Dirk Nannis, Damien Wright, Andrew McDonald, Cam White, you know, all these kind of people. So I was surrounded by a lot of really senior, consistent players. So, and who drove a lot of the culture, so I could just kind of sit back and absorb, really. And it was a really great time to be around because we practically won everything.
And Pete, you played in at least one Shield final with Bucky, didn't you?
Yeah, sure did. down in Hobart as our
it was a home final, wasn't it?
Yep. We kicked off the MCG thanks to the AFL. Just a stock standard thing of playing at the MCG. But down in Hobart, because we were the home team, we had to sort out our own accommodation as well. Buck, I don't know if you remember this.
We stayed up on the hill, you remember? And there was a spider the size of my hand in the toilet. I was always scared to go in there. Horrible.
It was a motel. We had four blokes sleeping in one room on bunk beds like that.
That was right. I was meant to be in that room. I was meant to be in there with three other guys, and I was, 30? I don't know, 33, whatever. I just walked in and went, this is not happening. And then I think James Pattinson was quite happy to swap with me. James Pattinson was quite happy to swap with me. I was like, good, because I can't be in with other people. That happened back in school days. You know, what's all that about? So, yeah, and then I remember that. That was hilarious, wasn't it?
Make matters worse, we then had to pack up halfway through the Shield final. Yeah. Pack all our stuff up in the morning, chuck it in the van, and then go to a different hotel and night at the hotel or something.
Yeah.
So was there some sort of festival down there? Was it booked out or whatever?
Yeah.
And Cricket Australia pay for organise the away team's accommodation, but they don't organise the home team because you assume it's going to be in your own state. So we had to do it, and I don't think we knew it was going to be a home game until real late. So then obviously we booked the accommodation late. We had our coaches, I think, were staying in an Airbnb down the road. It was just...
There was a festival on as well, Flem. There was some kind of... I can't remember what it was, but it was something going on.
Chris Rogers look-alike festival.
Well, I was just going to ask, Pete, how many runs you get in that game?
It's funny that you ask that, because you only ever ask that question if you've made runs.
I only played in two Shield finals, so I got hundreds in both of them, Pete. I'm pretty confident with that. But
got a bit of a life at the end of day one, was it?
Yeah, last ball of day one, I was absolutely I nicked one behind off. I don't know who it was. Oh, it was off Coulton Knoll. Yeah, Coulton Knoll smacked one behind. And the umpire, I remember, let me remember who it was, but he'd give me a couple of stinkers along the way, and then that was the evener. So, yeah, I didn't walk, but I was out. I was about 70-odd, I think. So, yeah, I can't believe you remember that.
Bucky, no doubt the highlight of your domestic cricket in Australia, and you've left a fine legacy, was captaining Sydney Thunder in the BBL.
That was hilarious, really.
Was that the year they paid all the money for Chris Gayle and that they had no one else? How'd that come about?
Pretty much. It was the second year of the BBL. I missed out the first year. No one wanted the bar of me in the BBL. I don't know why. Big hitter. But
Boom Boom Rogers.
Boom Boom. The second year, for whatever reason, Sydney Thunder came in. I was the second last pick. So I was pretty much on the minimum cash. I think the minimum was, it wasn't much. And But I thought, you know what, it'll be good. I'll go for a holiday in Sydney. I probably won't play. You know, I'll just make up the numbers. No big deal. And then we got there and none of the imports had arrived, and we did this kind of get to know you team building exercise. And I sat down and I realised I think I'd played more first class cricket than everybody else combined. And if you added up all their games, I reckon I'd have played more first class cricket than them. And then I got this horrible feeling. I was like, oh, my God, there's absolutely no captain here. And because Michael Clark was meant to come back and captain the first game. Then he was going to be available, and I don't know what was going to happen after that. But we went and played a practice match, and they said, would I captain it? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, no big deal. And then I actually got 30. Somehow I must have top edged a few over the keeper, but and then got 30, and all of a sudden I just started to realise, oh my God, I'm gonna get made captain here. And then I'm not the kind of person to say no, so they asked me, and it was a horrible time because we're staying out of Parramatta, which is okay. But there wasn't, you know, there wasn't a lot to do. We didn't even have a car at the beginning. But then, to be fair to the Sydney Thunder, they went and got us one. We were losing every game. And yeah, it was embarrassing. It wasn't that we were losing it. But by the 10-over mark in the first innings, we were basically lost, that kind of thing. And I remember so many times, I was bowling Dirk Nannis because he was our best player. He was bowling Dirk Nannis four overs up straight with three slips because we were trying to take wickets just to stay in the contest. And to be fair to Dirk, he bowled the house down, but the rest of us were rubbish, including myself. And the pitch was not particularly great then either, and didn't really suit big hitting Chris Rogers or Chris Gale. So it didn't help. Didn't help our import either. So we the other thing about, I'll never forget, we had Azam Mahmood, but we had a number of all-rounders. And the first game, captaining T20 is so hard, Pete, initially.
Yep.
Everything happened so quickly. And I had no real experience in it. And then, so captain, and I remember after 20 overs, we walked off, and Azam Mahmood, I think it was Azam, who was our one of our imports, kind of came up and just said, "Good work, Buck, good work." And I just turned around to him and went, "Oh my God, I forgot to bowl you your last two overs." I just forgot to bowl it. And then you say, yeah. And I know I'd heard the commentators and panned me for it. Honestly, I just forgot. You know, everything's happening so quick. So, that then, I remember at the back end, we were about none for six, and I was thinking, should I just pretend to be injured? Because I'm really not enjoying this. And I've never done that in my career. I've never pretended to be injured in my career. It was just starting to enter my thoughts. And then we had a fielding session. I caught one on the end of the thumb. I broke my thumb. And that was it. I finished. I was so happy.
Yeah, right.
You and we lost those two as well. So we're none from eight. So I really enjoyed watching the Renegades this year when I think they went none from eight or none from nine to either equal the record or break the record. I was ecstatic.
Bucky, I look forward to the Michael Jordan-like doco of that season then.
Yeah. Geez, we're impressive. Oh, my God.
But it got better, Bucky. It got better. Let's get into more positive. 2013 Ashes. In that 5 years, was there any feedback from selectors? You kept averaging 50. And how close to the Ashes did you find out that you were going to play and get picked?
For 4 years, it was absolutely donuts. Didn't hear a thing. And I always found it interesting because I was playing county cricket and Australian cricket. So in terms of domestic experience, I probably had anyone, you know, more than just about anyone playing in Australia, but no one had ever asked me anything until, to be fair to him, John Inverarity called me when I was in England the year before and just said, "Hey mate, would you like to catch up for a coffee?" And so I went and had a coffee for him, and he just started asking questions, and it was really good. I was good of Invers, you know, he was the chairman of selectors at the time, and good to get his thoughts. And then I didn't give him much thought. It wasn't until the back end of the season, and I think, you know, that the Aussie team went to India and homework gate happened. And all of a sudden, you know, like you kind of cultivate a few friendships in the media or whatever. And someone kind of said to me, had written an article and my name had kind of, for the first real time, said, you know, he could play. He should play in the Ashes. And all of a sudden, it's really weird. It's like couple of the other journos kind of jumped on the back, and then all of a sudden there's this momentum for you. So it's almost like, so sometimes you feel like you need the media to start this kind of snowball, you know. And then it was when Greg Shippard, who was my coach at Victoria, I was the last time I was seeing him before going back to play for Middlesex, and he said, "Mate, have you got your baggy green?" And I was just like, "Oh, nah, I think it's at my parents' place somewhere." And he said, "Oh, well, I'd take it if I was you." And I didn't, because I didn't want to jinx it. But wow. I was over, and I was doing a fitness session at Finchley Gym, I remember, and I got the call, and it was Invers saying, "Mate, just to let you know you're in, and could you please not tell anyone, because we're not going to release it to the media." And I just walked straight back out. Someone had seen who the phone call was from, and I just had this big smile on my face, and I was just, "Oh, you've been picked, haven't you?" And I was just like, "Oh, mate, I'm not supposed to say anything, you know." But it was really good. It was almost like a day of elation, and then reality set in, and then I just got shit scared, really. I was, oh, God, I was about to play in one of the biggest series, foreign soil. What happens if I speak? You know, like, there were the thoughts that started to creep in a lot, and that was a really interesting time.
How did you were saying you didn't take your baggy green over, so how did you freight that over, or did you fly your parents over, make sure it was on them at all time, sort of handcuffed to a briefcase setup?
Well, parents were doing the Grey Nomad, so they kind of had rented their house out and were driving around Australia, and about 6 months in, and then they kind of cut it short. Interestingly enough, they were near Melbourne, and that was when they got told to go look at the human hobble cricket ground that you guys no doubt have been to, and and they found out it was for sale, and they ended up buying a cricket ground. So I don't know if people know, but my parents owned a cricket ground called the Village Green cricket ground. So, but that's another story. But then they had it, so they kind of maybe had got like a bit of a feeling that maybe they should keep it. So it was with them, and then they just finished. And then they flew over. They flew over to bring it over. You know, they weren't going to miss it. I mean, it's things like that, you know, like one of the best moments I had in sport, in cricket, was scoring my first 100 for Australia. It was the fourth test. I'd been on 96 for about 40 minutes. I just couldn't get off front, so I wouldn't be a bad ball. And in the end, I hit a panic sweep, and I got it. And it's one of those great moments. And I was meant to have dinner with a mate from England who picked me up from the airport the first time I ever went to England. But in the end, I said to him, "Nah, I'm actually going to have you know, like, my dinner with my parents." And just sitting there and having dinner with your parents, you know, the people who'd been on the journey with you, that the kind of the whole way after you got 100 was, and still is, probably, you know, one of the best things I've ever experienced, you know, like just being able to show your gratitude. That was a really special moment.
And on that Ashes series, you had you'd established yourself, pretty strong fifth test showing. Was there any signs, the belief, even though you'd lost the series, had grown so much that you'd whitewash England at home that next summer?
Yeah. I sometimes think because we were on a bit of a losing streak, but to end a losing streak, I've kind of come to a bit of an understanding that you've got to actually try and not lose by so much to begin with, and then gradually just get closer and closer to the opposition before you earn the right to then start getting your nose in front. It's not like you go from losing to winning in one go kind of thing. So we got hammered in the first two tests. I got a funny story about Jeff Thompson after the second test, after we were woeful. But towards the back end, we started to feel like, actually, we're kind of holding our own with these with England. Like, they're just kind of getting over the line a little bit. But we had moments where we felt. And then we got to Australia and Mitchell Johnson came along. And, you know, the rest is history. You know, he bowled the best 6 months of bowling I've ever seen in my life. So, and that was probably the icing on the cake we needed. But we were heading in the right direction. We were kind of earning the right. And then we won one game, and that was it. Once we won one game, we just got this huge belief. Because I think they'd gone eight tests or something without winning one, kind of thing. So it's a ridiculously long time for Australian cricket. And so all of a sudden, 1-1, and then just the hunger kicked in, and we won the next. You know, we won five in a row, and then beat South Africa in South Africa. So it was just we'd grown as a team and added a couple of the right bits. And Darren Lehman, to be fair to him, gave some real clarity around how we should play. And I think that was, you know, the best thing he did by far. He was so strong on his belief on how we should go about our cricket. And it just gave all the players this just, okay, that's what we do. We'll go for it, you know. And I would sit in the back of these meetings and actually switch off a little bit, because he was telling everyone to go out and be brave and take them on and, you know, and bowl fast and short at the tail and things like, you know, at times we intimidate. Whereas that's not going to work for me, is it? You know, I had to still, you know, play the defensive low-risk cricket. So, but I could see what he was trying to do, and it was excellent, yeah. So, but that story about Jeff Thompson after the second test in Lords, because we lost, the first test was Ashton Agar, where he got 98. Yeah. Oh. We nearly stole it with, I think it was... Haddon at the end, James Pattinson got a few, and Agar was there at the end and stuff. And we were kind of, you know, we got about 15 runs out or whatever. And then we went to Lords and the wheels came off. It was horrible. I'd played at Lords. I'd never seen it turn. And all of a sudden there were these hot holes in the wicket for Graham Swan. And, then after that, my mate had I played with it at Northamptonshire, had a benefit dinner where every, you know, if you play 10 years, you get a benefit, and you get to make money out of it in county cricket. And he had a dinner at the Oval. So I went there and as a kind of a guest, and, there's about 250 people there. And on this panel was Alastair Cook, Alex Stewart and Jeff Thompson.
Uh-oh.
And I can't remember who was MC, but they were asking questions, and it was like, I say, Cookie, so, like, you know, it's 2-0 to England after two tests. What do you think the final test, the score's going to be, you know? And Cookie went, oh, look, I can't answer that, and that kind of thing. And then got Alex Stewart, and Alex Stewart said, oh, well, I'm tipping England to win 5-0. They got the upper hand, you know, here, or Australia not looking strong. And then he got the Jeff Thompson and Tomo just, and he knew I was there because I'd been introduced. He went, oh, I don't know, but we are shit at the moment. And he goes, our top three, I don't know if I'm not supposed to swear on here, but sorry. He goes, our top three are junk. He was like, this is the worst top three I've ever seen play for Australia. And I remember I'm having a non-alcoholic drink, and I can feel 250 pairs of eyes just staring straight at me. And I'm kind of just looking at the plate in front of me. Oh my God, it was a horrible moment. And I went up to someone after because my dad played against him. And I just went, he walked past to say goodbye to a couple of the people who I knew. And he shook the hand. He said, thanks, David was his name. Thanks, Steve. Steve was the guy whose benefit dinner was. And he turned to me and he went, thanks. And then he kind of shook my hand and he walked off. And I was like, this bloke doesn't even know who I am. And then he turned around, he stopped. He turned around, he came back, he says, oh, now I remember your ugly face from your father. He says, and he went, good luck. And he walked off. Just like, what the hell happened there? Oh. He just abused me twice. So I was like, Thanks, Tubbo. Appreciate that, mate. He wasn't my favourite bloke for a while, but I've forgiven you.
Yeah, I reread your book yesterday. He didn't do the forward, did he?
No, he missed out on that. But, Tomo, isn't he? He's an entertainer.
That's awesome, mate. We're almost out of time here. One of the great things is you actually had the opportunity to call your own time on your career, but you're coaching now. What are your aspirations and, what's happening, hopefully, when we get out of this terrible pandemic?
Yeah, it's horrible time at the moment, isn't it? I think as any aspiring coach wants to, you want to see how far you can go and what you can achieve and be involved in some good groups. So I guess the difficult thing is trying to get experience. You know, like I think that the better sides always want experienced coaches. So just trying to kind of get your foot in the door and those kind of things. So, really just be around good players. You know, that's I think that I'd like to do, and hopefully there's some opportunities in the future. But I've been coaching for a couple of years now. It's been really enjoyable, you know, getting better and better and enjoying the process. But yeah, I think the other thing you spoke about there was finishing on your own terms. I was pretty lucky, you know. I think people always said to me, I always ask people, Flem, I don't know what your take is on this, but you'd ask people and say, mate, when do you know when to retire? Yeah. Have you ever, like, if I asked you, Flem, I said, when do you know when to retire? What would your answer be?
You get retired. No, you're 0.01%. You're 0.01%.
Well, my point was, I think the people who I'd asked, they always said, oh, Buck, you just know when you know. And it just felt like the biggest rubbish answer. You know when you know. What does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. And then I remember in the third test at Edgbaston, and I'd been hit in the head in the second test. Had a bit of a concussion kind of thing, and then Steve Finn was bowling thunderbolts, and he bowled me a bouncer, and I didn't move, and it was just luck it didn't hit me in the head, and that was the moment. That was actually the moment I just went, it's time. Like I can't keep doing this. Like I can't, you know. Like I'm just not moving, and I'm getting a bit scared of, you know, what's going to happen. And I'm happy. I was happy.
150 for home of cricket. Well done, Chris Rogers.
Hey Pete, great to chat with Bucky. Really good character. Some great stories. But looking back at his career, the amount of knockbacks and the resilience that he had to continually call on, you know, and people getting picked ahead of him. And he looks back at his test record, which is unbelievable, winning Ashes series. The one thing we didn't have time to get into was we talked about the change of state, but we didn't talk about he played county for four different teams, scored a double hundred at least for all of them. You've had experience over there in county cricket. I mean, what's the best way to go about it, and how much has it improved you? And obviously, you would have been over there this English summer if the lockdown didn't apply.
Yeah. I mean, I'm coming up to my fourth county as well, so just making the rounds over there in England, following in Bucky's footsteps. But I would have been there this year at Middlesex, where Bucky played as well, and would have had the honour to captain them at Lords, similar to what Bucky did as well. So that was, that was going to be something pretty special for me this year. And you know, unfortunately, with everything going on, there's bigger things out there, and that's the way it is. But you know, looking forward to being able to do that, you know, in the coming years as well with Middlesex. But in terms of county cricket and how it really improves your game, it's just another condition. So in Australia, we grow up pretty true wickets. you know, to be fair, around the country, and you know, you get a seam, and you have to learn how to play a reverse swinging ball because it's, you know, hard and dry wickets. So that there's your challenge there. In India, you go over, you look for your spin, and you improve that kind of play. So again, England is another challenge in itself with a ball that swings consistently for 80 overs. and a wicket that is generally green and soft enough that you're getting a bit of sideways seam movement as well. So again, it's another challenge, and it's about finding, you know, what works for your technique and making sure you play, you know, as the batter, playing the ball really, really late and owning that that box or that area that we'd spoken about earlier. So it's a great challenge, and it definitely improves you, you know, going forward in any sort of future conditions.
Yeah, not just Bucky, was it? I mean, years ago, Alan Border went over, Mark Waugh, and then older than that, you know, you had the Hussey and Hayden and all come back a lot better players. So there's a big benefit. And then for yourself with the captaincy, I mean, Justin Langer did that as well, you know, before Bucky. But guess what time it is here? Now, Bradley Hodge is taking a little bit of a break here, but he has this little segment, and all the famous people in the world, they don't tweet, they don't go on Instagram because they're scared that they'll get named and shamed in the social media self-promoter award. Pete, you've got the job this week. What have you got for us?
Yeah, I'm excited about this. I'm excited and nervous because I'm worried about, you know, backlash. Potential fame. Yeah, there might be a bit of backlash, but you know what? We take it, and you got to go for it. So you got to still call them out, Flem.
And no doubt we'll get nominated at some stage too.
Oh yeah, I was having a look at my Instagram feed before this with a bit of a concerned eye that it might come back to bite me in the ass. But mate, here goes. And my first nomination. I thought I'd take a pretty easy option and go with Marcus Stoinis.
Yeah, one of our favourites.
Good friend of mine, and sort of just looked back at what he was doing over isolation and just wanted to talk about his games that he was playing, you know, over social media with Dan Ricciardo and mate, we know what you're doing there. You're showing to the world that you're friends with you know, an F1 driver, arguably one of the best drivers in the world, and an X Games and Olympic snowboarder. Like, you're not fooling anyone here, mate. You could easily just do that off to the side and have some fun with your mates. But just wanted to show the world, yeah, that he's got some pretty big friends.
Now, on that, that's votes. I mean, that's all about lifting his social media presence.
100%. Trying to steal some of Ricardo's fan base there.
But don't stop Stoin. Who next?
No, we love it. next, I've gone with the original person the one that made the self-promoter award in Brad Hodge himself.
So
I listened back to a couple of Bowlology reports and a couple of self-promoter awards, and he slammed Marnus for putting up some gym posts.
Yeah.
A couple of back gym posts. Now, those gym posts were in April. And in May, Dodgeball has then put up a post of himself in a homemade gym with the caption, "In full training for Supercars Championship Celebrity E-Series Racing. Should be right on the bumper of Barry Ryan with full sight of Peter Siddle in my rear view mirror." So not only has he done what he said Marnus has done, he's then name dropped a couple of celebrities to show.
How many? I lost count.
Well, there's
sponsors. Another,
and sponsors. And even showed that it was a celebrity racing event.
Yeah.
So he was kind of, you know, the humble brag saying that he is a celebrity.
We know what he's doing.
Yeah, we see through that, Dodgeball.
Who's next?
Well, this is my favourite. Absolute favourite for the week. Yuvraj Singh, and we've spoken about Brodie getting his 500 wickets. So Yuvraj puts out on Twitter, I'm sure every time I write something about Stuart Broad, people relate him getting hit for six sixes.
Boom.
Today, I request all my fans to applaud what he has achieved. 500 test wickets is no joke. It takes hard work, dedication, determination. Broadie, you're a legend. Hats off. So great tweet, you know,
yeah.
Very nice of him. But just that little brag at the front just to say, yeah, you might have got 500 test wickets, but I hit you for six sixes in and over, and don't you forget it.
It's self-promotion.
Self-promotion at its best.
Implanting himself into someone else's milestone. Very good, Pete.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. No, pretty cheeky. I've got a couple of others. Well,
good research this. Well done.
went back a couple of posts, but again, a Bowlology Report favourite, Shane Warne.
Yes. The King. Like,
the king is, and he's the king for a reason. And he puts up an Instagram post, fun times and fun battles with these legends. Hope you enjoyed them too.
And are they just a couple of punters from the
audience? I mean, not quite. He's gone in with Brian Lara and Sachin Tendulkar. that's just similar to. Similar to you, Vraj, there he's putting himself in other people's milestones or stature. He referred to them as legends, probably thinking that he's also a legend as well, just for being with them and their battles and whatnot. So
it's not a massive one from the King. It's just there.
It's probably more subtle from him, which I thought was a nice touch.
One more.
One more. Again, a similar one to a fan favourite, Michael Clark.
Yes.
This was more of an interesting one. I think he was more promoting his modelling and maybe how good he can look. But the caption read on Instagram, "It's Friday and I'm thirsty." And then he tagged in Face of Man Sydney, which has nothing to do with drinking any form of liquid. It's actually
a moisturizer or something.
Yeah. Shaving. Yeah, something to do with the face. So not sure where the tag and that came in together, but it seemed like it was an excuse to put up a pretty good photo of himself. He was looking pretty sharp.
It is, and he's broadening himself because there's normally a lot of gym shots with Pup. And then when you read the alcohol, I thought it was going to be an alcohol sponsor, but he's gone with a bit of a makeover one. So good to see him back. He's consistent. He's not the shark, Greg Norman. And please watch out for Normo. But if I had to give votes, I'm going to go 5 to Stoin.
Yep.
Keep it coming. It's consistent. Yeah, exactly. Danzy's mate. Definitely.
Yep.
Hodge 4, but watch out for Hodgy. I just feel like in isolation that there could be some gold from him. 3 from Yuvraj. You actually could have wiped out that first sentence and just said, well done, Brody, 500 test wickets, you're a legend. Yep. Self-promotion. Okay. And just one vote to Warnie and Pup. You know, that's not extreme for them. Because they're very prolific,
yep,
and we love it because of it. But that's a good job first up. But that is the Social Media Self-Promoter Award. Pete, we have a little segment on the Bowlology Report called the Retro Book Review. I go back and have a look at some cricket books, reread them, and just do a little bit of a review. And this week, it's my first Victorian coach, a legend of Australian cricket and Victorian cricket. It's Ian Redpath. And what about the title of the book, Always Ready?
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Just a pun on the name. Also, one of the most reliable Australian batsmen of all time, anywhere from 1 to 6. Tayo is a big fan of Redders, the Chappells, Rod Marsh, Dennis Silly. You know, they say he would have died for the baggy green. He was a great man. And what he goes through, little trivia bits for Redders. He actually was an amateur when he first started his test career because he was still running around for the Geelong amateurs footy on the wing.
There you go. So he had skills.
He had good skills, and I don't know, like, he was about 60 kilos, 6 foot and 60 kilos, Redders. Yeah. But, you know, imagine in this day and age, someone giving away their match payments and contract because they wanted to keep amateur status to play football in the amateurs there. Also, he got man-catted by Charlie Griffith. Yeah, backing up too far. He actually admitted it was his own fault. He talks about getting a boat to England. That's how old Big Red is. Tours to South Africa, India's riots. He also deliberately chucked a ball, got called for chucking, I think the last ball he bowled in England back in 1964. But very topical in this great autobiography, Bill Laurie had a documentary done him on Monday night. I haven't watched it yet, but I will, recorded it. What a legend. But one of the great things, you know, great commentator, Bill Laurie. People forget what a great player he was, but his last game was captain and then he got sacked. 1970-71, and to read out of Redder's book, at this point, Bill Laurie had made 324 runs at an average of 40. So he's actually topping the average for Australia. Obviously, this had a devastating effect for everyone. He was not only dropped as Australian captain, he was completely omitted from the side in an unprecedented move, short-sighted in its action. Good on you, Redders. Ill-conceived tactically, smashing in them again, and a disgrace in its application. Now, Redders, woof, has absolutely smashed him. His great mate Keith Stackpole and Redders were in a motel room when the news was conveyed to us by telephone, and quite frankly, we couldn't believe it. Bill arrived, and once they talked, he said he'd heard it on the car radio. But Redders says, actually, it wasn't till a year later that Bill told him he was completely in the dark and had no knowledge of being dropped until Stacky and Redders told him.
Oh,
imagine that happening these days. Can you believe that?
That's extraordinary. Oh, mate. Even a phone call is for that. Like, it would be bad. Like, at least do it in person. But to just find out from your teammates.
Bill, being proud, said, oh, yeah, I've heard it, but he hadn't. Oh. So he actually got told in a casual conversation between two of his two Victoria mates. Interesting impact. You know, Ian Chappell got the captaincy after that and said, the bastards aren't going to get me. And he obviously resigned from the captaincy and still played and gave it to his brother Greg. 1972 Ashes series, you know, Bill never played again. Actually, Redders didn't go on that tour and Graham McKenzie. But absolutely stunning read. Every young Australian cricketer, this should be taught at schools. And it was $9.95 back in 1976. If you can get this under $9,000, $995, it's an absolute bargain. Six balls out of six there for Redders.
Oh, great work. Right.
All right, that's it, Pete, for the Bowlology report. Just before we go, I just want to thank, we had one listener from Vanuatu in the last episode. Now, I know the former coach, he might be the CEO now, there is Shane Dietz, who I played with in South Australia. To talk about Dietz, he's a player. I think he broke Shippy's record as the slowest 100 at the MCG. So to all Vanuatu cricketers, he's a great man, Shane Dietz. Do not bat like him, particularly how you play a lot of T20 cricket. Because if Dietz played T20 cricket, he'd be not out three at the end of the innings. So, Dieter, if it was you, send us a message. And Pete, well done on debut. I thought your debut against South Africa, a neat little 54, was a fine effort against a great attack. But I reckon this debut might be right up there. How have you found it?
Thanks, mate. Well, similar to the test debut, you know, a little bit scratchy first up. You know, got to get a feel for it. But definitely enjoyed it, mate. And, you know, I'd love to come back if you'll have me ever again.
No, we'll be doing it again. And you were brilliant. Thanks to Bucky Rogers as well. I think we'll catch up with Bucky again. I still had a lot more to say there. And, well, everyone around the world, but for mainly us Victorians, wear a mask and stay safe. Thanks, Pete.
Yep. Cheers, Glenn.
Where'd it go?
Right in the lumberyard. It's okay. We'll work on it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.